and Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. DeMays just got a gift delivery.
Yes, my man Takahashi. If anybody knows, you know, Tak or me, if you heard me talk about this facility, one of the first names I mentioned is John Takahashi.
This place would not run
without Takahashi. Look at him. Takahashi is like 82 years old, but Taki, he moves around better than...
He doesn't look a day over 35.
This guy looks the same. I met Taki my sophomore year in college, because as you know, on Caroline, I don't know if they did it at LSU, but the trainers... They would switch from sport to sport, like, all year round. They would never just stay with one sport. They kind of rotated around, most of them. So Taki got with us right after my sophomore year, so it was my junior year.
So you go back to Michigan State.
Yeah, I go back to Michigan State.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Taki was working there.
He's a lifer.
And then when I left Michigan State, came here, got drafted, Taki followed me. He came here.
He couldn't get away from me.
So I've been knowing Taki, half my life.
Just brought over a D-Mace 2000 Super Bowl jersey.
Exactly. And it still got a little dirt on it.
Game worn.
Yeah, game worn.
That is really cool.
I like it, Taki. Thank you.
That is really cool.
Man.
Joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you for joining us as we walk down memory lane, a little nostalgia with D-Mace's old Super Bowl jersey. But wanted to break down Mike Sando's most recent quarterback tiers with you. Ryan Tannehill at the bottom of Tier 3, the 22nd-ranked quarterback of 30 in Mike Sando's tiers. Do you think that's fair?
No, I don't. listen, I think that – look, last year was kind of a rough year in general. I think for the offense, you know, obviously the receiver position had a lot to do with it. But – I just remember, you know, we do something. It's not exactly what Mike Sando does, but, you know, we fill out, you know, kind of a top 10 list in a bunch of different categories for quarterbacks. And I just remember a year ago, Ryan being like, at least on my list, like way up there on a lot of, you know, the kind of categories that I was filling out. And so, I think, and I said this to you guys last week, I think, look, it's a dependent position. And with it being a dependent position, I think in some ways we are very unfair to some quarterbacks when you're looking at the supporting cast and how that impacts them. And I think last year for Ryan's a perfect example of that.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. So I want to go through the list with you because we were kind of doing this on our own, going through the third tier. And I asked myself, do I have my two-tone blue glasses on? Or is this really kind of an unfair ranking? So going through tier three, who would you rather have as a starting quarterback, Kyler Murray or Ryan Tannehill?
Oh, Ryan, easily.
Derek Carr, Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan.
Jared Goff, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, now... Jared Goff is 28 years old. He's coming off of a very good year. I think you could have a discussion about that with Ryan. What's Ryan, 35? You know, so like, I mean, 7 years younger, you know, so there's some things with that. But, you know, Jared Goff, I think there's something to him for sure. Mm-hmm.
Fair. Russell Wilson, Ryan Tannehill.
Oof. Which Russ?
Russ of last year or
Super Bowl Russ or Russ of last year?
Hey,
Wilson, no.
Yeah, I mean, listen, after I think you're having a conversation about it. Like, I think there's so much uncertainty of like, wait, what just happened? So, listen, prior to last year, I don't think it'd be much of a conversation with Russ with what Russ has accomplished. But off of last year, yeah, I mean, I can go either way on that one.
Tua, Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan.
Jimmy Garoppolo or Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill.
Daniel Jones, Ryan Tannehill.
Tannehill easily.
Geno Smith, Ryan Tannehill.
I think I'd put Geno in a similar category as Jared Goff.
Justin Fields or Ryan Tannehill?
you know, it's tricky. Like, Fields is going to be better in two years, you know. And so, you know, again, probably, you know, what we're, you know, kind of how we're looking at it. But, yeah, I mean, I think Fields is a ascending player in a big way. So, probably Fields.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Yeah, Tim, we're going over this list, and I just don't know how, you know, they come up with their ranking system, because they have some guys on there that I believe, you know, as much as I like Jalen Hurts, I would rather have a Lamar Jackson than a Jalen Hurts. I think if you gave Lamar the weapons that Jalen had last year, I think you would have another MVP type of season. Mm-hmm. And if Jalen Hurts doesn't get healthy, I think, if he doesn't get hurt, I think he wins the MVP last season. But that's the sort of conundrum I'm in when it comes to ranking these quarterbacks. It's like, okay, one guy has personnel, the other guy doesn't. One guy's a little bit younger, the other guy's a little bit older. One guy has done it, but it's not doing it now. It's just weird how they rank all these quarterbacks nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, the context of it matters. Like, you know, and I don't know, you know, Caroline obviously was like kind of running me through those quarterbacks, and you know, I'm kind of like, oh, like Fields now or later, you know, and like, I don't know if you kind of were doing the same thing in your head as you kind of went through it, but look, that's the part for me. But I would just at a minimum say this: take age out of it, and you just take some of those quarterbacks. Kyler Murray's, the issues that I would have with him from a leadership perspective, the health issues between you know, a guy like Garoppolo or Tua, there was another one in there. Oh, Daniel Jones, and like what I've like to me, like in that tier, in that group, like I'm looking at guys in that group, and I'm like, guys, I'm not having the same conversation about Ryan Tannehill on those quarterbacks. To me, now some of the other guys, Jared Goff, like sure, like I think it's fair to do that, but yeah, and look. We're never evaluating these guys in a vacuum. It's a little bit like I'm sure receivers, you know, would look around the league and be like, man, like Wes Welker's catching 112 balls a year. And, you know, I'm lucky to get 112 targets. Like, what's going on? You know, like that definitely happens. You know, systems are different. Supporting casts are different. Coaching staffs are different. So, look, that's why I do think it ends up being a little unfair, you know, when you evaluate these quarterbacks. But, like, look, Daniel Jones threw for, like, over 280 yards twice last year. I mean, maybe it's even low. Like, I just – now, he didn't have an amazing supporting cast, but, like, really? Like, we're – like, let's just take Ryan out of it for a second. Jared Goff and Daniel Jones were in the same tier? Like, can't. Like, no, I'm not getting with that.
Yeah, me either. And it's just weird how they sort of rank these quarterbacks nowadays. We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, the Russell Wilson comparison was brought up with Ryan Tannehill. I want to sort of morph off of that a little bit with Sean Payton and his comments that he made. Do you think those were irresponsible comments? Because I hear a lot of people say, well, he did it because of his team. I'm thinking, like, something like that you just don't do to fire your team up. Take a shot at another, you know, head coach, a coach that's in your fraternity. You don't – that's like, you know, players taking shots at players when they leave, like going up to the podium and saying, well, it's because of that guy that, you know, we didn't do well as he's leaving out the building. I'm just not a big proponent of that.
Yeah, I will say this, and I know Sean is kind of like, you know, apologize and try to step back from it, but he's a Bill Parcells disciple. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. I really do. And I know he said he made a mistake and he was back in TV mode and all that stuff. I don't think that's true. I really don't. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. I think he was talking to his team through the media. And he got their attention. He got everybody's attention. And he basically was like, hey, how it went here last year, like that didn't work and we're not going to do it. And so, like, there's a new way. There's a new sheriff in town. That's how we're doing it. There are certain coaches that I think are culture changers. Like, they're in part brought in because, like, whatever's going on needs to be changed. Like, Bill Parcells is a culture changer. Like, he would come in and tear everything down to build it back up. Tom Coughlin is a culture changer. Come in, tear everything down to try to build it back up. Sean Payton's the same exact way. Like, that is why he is there. And so that's why I think Sean did it, regardless of what he's since said. And then in terms of the fraternity, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't see a Bill Parcells, at least from my knowledge, I didn't see a Bill Parcells tear down another coaching staff. I didn't see, you know, one of these other coaches that were their previous spots and then they go to another spot tear a coaching staff down, yeah. Or in particular tear one coach down like Sean Payton did. To me, it wasn't because of the fraternity, and it's because of it so tightly knit and all these guys just interchangeable and end up playing it, you know, coaching against or coaching with one another. I just think you don't do that.
Yeah, listen, I agree with that in terms of standpoint. Like, it is not common to have that stuff happen. But you and I both know that privately, in this amazingly tight fraternity, there are some really strong opinions about if somebody's a good coach or not. Who's getting the credit when somebody else should be getting the credit? Like, I mean, it's almost impossible to avoid those conversations with coaches. Like, the number of guys that I've talked to that are like, man, he's getting the credit? Like, wait, I know that so-and-so is the one doing all the work. Like, I feel like, you know, none of these guys have, you know, don't have an opinion about these coaches. Now, they don't speak about it. But look, I think the other aspect of that is also this. If you don't have a relationship with a guy, like, if you don't know him and Sean, you know, you didn't coach with his dad, or maybe you had feelings about Nathaniel Hackett's dad and the type of coach he was. Like, I think you then can get a little more reckless with the things you say. And to me, that's why I feel like, you know, look, he was talking about somebody that he doesn't know. You know, he's talking about somebody he hasn't worked with. And that's why I think that he took those shots.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I'm bringing Hasselbeck. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us now. Tim, we're out at Titans training camp today. And one of my biggest takeaways, I felt like the defense won the day. It felt like the defensive line was all up on the offensive line. But one thing that I really struggle with training camp is looking at it, okay, was it a bad offensive play or was it a really good defensive play and vice versa? How do you kind of evaluate that?
Yeah, I think it's a great observation by you in terms of when you look at it, you lead and you're driving away and you're like, man, the offense got dominated. Like, the defense can be good. Like, I think the thing that, you know, is always so hard to figure out is like, all right, well, did the defense put in a new front and a couple of new blitzes and new coverages? And were they working on that? And then was some of that stuff that the offense really hadn't been working on or dealing with? And so, you know, they're out there doing base stuff or they're working on a specific shift in motion and they were concerned about making sure everybody was dialed in with the route adjustments if you were to get this type of coverage. And so, you know, I think what that does is that just creates an environment for it just to be lopsided certain days. And, you know, where, look, the offense has a clear advantage or the defense has a clear advantage. The other thing people need to realize, too, if you're just a fan watching a practice, the way some coaches do it is they'll say, all right, here's the deal. Like, I'm going to give the head coach will say, look, I'm going to give you some situations. The defense is going to enter in what they would call in that thing in the practice script, and then the offense is going to get it, and then they're going to be able to put their plays in, or vice versa. And so, you know, it's like an open book test, you know, for one side of the ball potentially. So I think all of those things could be a factor. That's why until you get into an environment where you know, you're starting to prepare for the opponent. I think it's just so hard to get a gauge of what you truly have on your football team.
It is. It is tough. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, is with us. I think we've got a legitimate backup quarterback battle on our hands between Malik Willis and Will Levis. And yesterday, Will Levis absolutely won the day. You know, he was 3 of 3 in 7-on-7 periods with a number of touchdown passes. He looked great when the Titans were working in red zone. Today, struggled a bit, maybe misread the defenses. And he has a tendency to either underthrow and then overcompensate and overthrow. Malik Willis does some good things, and then some plays he just holds on to the ball a little bit too long. How do you evaluate, you know, these quarterback battles as they kind of unfold in camp? What are the little breadcrumbs that you like to pick up on as camp moves on throughout the rest of summer?
Yeah, I think just general production when you're watching them like you did today, you know, of just like seeing guys and saying, all right, like that looks like a pretty good day. And I think the fact that there's competition is also a great thing, you know, just to so that you always have that feeling of having to compete every single practice. But I think, and I last year is probably a great learning lesson for this, is that you need to get out into a live environment. And because part of what happens for a quarterback when all of a sudden you don't have the red jersey on, which makes you untouchable, is it starts to move fast. And if you're a guy that's a good runner, like Malik is, do your eyes go down and you want to take off? Is that your natural reaction when the first guy isn't open or isn't there or that type of thing? And so I think, like, live bullets are where it really matters for a quarterback. And so, look, this should be a great preseason. As we've shortened these preseasons and the opportunity, you know, I think with Ryan being 35, the established starter, I think this should be a great preseason to get a true competition in a live environment for both of the young quarterbacks.
Excuse me, Tim. Now, Tim, is the – I've been thinking about this in regards to the running back position. It's sort of like the point guard position in the NBA, how over the years it sort of morphed into something totally different than what we were accustomed to seeing in the 80s, in the 90s, in the early 2000s. And maybe Steph Curry and, you know, AI and guys like that sort of helped transition sort of that point guard position. Is no longer Isaiah Thomas where, you know, I'm a controller team, I'm going to score about 16 to 17 points. No, you got to be able to do a lot more from the point guard position. More importantly, you got to be a shooter. Do you think the running back position is sort of trending that way where it's no longer, hey, listen, you may be a damn good runner, but you better be able to catch the ball out the backfield. You better be able to line up as a receiver in this league, because if you're not, you know, you're not going to be able to maximize your dollar amount from that position. I look at people like Cordarrelle Patterson, who was drafted as a receiver, played special teams, played running back, played receiver. You look at Deebo Samuel. Last year, he was in this sort of contract dispute a little bit because he wanted to be compensated for him playing running back as well. So do you think that running back position is the position that is changing, that needs to change or has changed more rapidly than any other position?
Yeah, I do. I think, like, tight end's a good example of position that over time has really, really changed, right? Like, that guy was, you know, an inline blocker, and he was next to the tackle, and his hand was in the dirt. And the next thing you know, Jimmy Graham is in a two-point stance outside the numbers, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, what position are you playing again? It's like, no, you know, and like, that happens. And I think that running back is another one of those spots, because – the wear and tear, what you realize is the wear and tear on that position, like, it's hard to be the hammer for, you know, more than one contract. That's just the reality of that. And then you look around, whether it's Alvin Kamara, whether it's, you know, the guys you mentioned or Christian McCaffrey, like, that to me is how you separate yourself at the position. That guy that it's like, no, you never want to take him off the field. Like, that is different. And, like, I know we talked a lot before about receivers and number of targets and how you can affect a football game. Well, look, if Julio Jones, for the majority of his career, was the most targeted receiver in NFL history, getting 10 balls thrown his way per game. Well, what happens if you have a McCaffrey, a Kamara, Saquon Barkley type guy that can play all three downs? You can hand it to him 17 times and you can throw it his direction 7 times. Like, wait a second now. Now all of a sudden you're taking a guy that maybe you view as the best athlete on the field and you're giving him over 20 opportunities versus somebody that you view as maybe the best athlete on the field in a Julio at one point or A.J. Brown, and you say, well, we can only throw it his direction 10 times. Like, you're doubling that. So, yeah, I really do think it will change. And I think that the guys that can do it all, as we talk about solutions at the running back position, like, maybe there's a way to say, look, you're a running back. Unless you're somebody that had over 60 receptions, now all of a sudden you are some type of hybrid offensive player, and maybe there's a franchise tag number for that. Hmm. I think that ends up being how that starts to change a little bit.
That's like a Percy Harvin, a guy you could just play anywhere on the offensive side of the ball.
Debo. Yeah, guys.
Yeah, Debo said, yeah.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, speaking of the running back position, the Jonathan Taylor, Jim Mersey, Indianapolis Colts saga, it is bizarre and wild and fascinating to me, the way that everything has kind of played out. How do you see that ending up in Indianapolis with Jonathan Taylor?
I mean, the way I say it is, if I die tomorrow, that you and D-Mate are still going to do the radio show next Tuesday, okay?
The radio.
But you don't need
on.
To be going nowhere no time soon, Neil.
Jim. Mean, listen, that was bizarre. Like, that
weird.
Was really, really bizarre. Really weird. And, look, I think this, unfortunately, like, these running backs are upset and all that stuff. But, like, look, the owners aren't deciding to do this. Like, the game is deciding to do this. Like, the game is deciding that, like, look, quarterbacks are going to make more money. And as quarterbacks are making more money, other positions are going to make less. And, you know, which positions those are kind of, you know, it naturally gets decided by the market. Now, the difference is, and, you know, some organizations don't have owners like, or most don't have owners like Jim Mersey. And so they don't say the crazy stuff, and they don't kind of, you know, fire back at a, you know, at a player. And so that's the part of it that I think is strange. But look, the reality is, for someone like Jonathan Taylor, coming off of what we just were talking about the versatile every down back. Look, Jonathan Taylor is a traditional running back. He is going to go the way that most guys at that position go. They're going to run him into the ground. He's going to get close to 30 years old, and he's going to not be nearly as effective. Like, that's just the reality of it. Like, he's not. And so, like, look, if you're the Colts, why would you sign him to some deal that other teams aren't signing running backs to? So I think there's the difference in the strangeness of it, a little bit like Sean Payton calling out another coach. Like an owner basically saying to one of his best players, like, hey, look, the league doesn't need you. Like, you know, I don't know that that's the right way to handle business, but, look, that's why he's kind of the way he is, I guess.
Now, Tim, with that being said, do you think you will ever see running backs moving forward eclipse the numbers that we've seen prior? I mean, as a career, not necessarily individually in a season, but I'm saying when you're talking Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, we're talking 15,000, 14,000 yards. Do you think you start to slowly not see that anymore?
Yeah, I mean, people aren't going to call as many runs. I mean, they're just not. Like, it's turning into a passing league. Guys aren't playing as long. Look, if a guy is a big, you know, a really good player, he's going to make a lot of money. That position is like being a boxer. So it's like, wait a second, do you want to continue to put your body through this when you've made a bunch of money? When that wasn't the case, like, listen, Emmitt Smith did fine, but like, those dollars weren't today's dollars. And so I think there are so many factors of why, you know, that's like, people aren't going to catch those like all-time career marks in terms of, you know, rushing yards and things of that nature. I really – I don't think it will end up being the same. And I think just like you were saying, like the position's changing too, mm-hmm. right? Like you get different body types in there. Look, linebackers used to look like Chris Spielman. You know, now yes. linebackers look like, you know what, like he might be able to, you know, qualify for the Olympics in the, you know, in 400 meter. Like it just, like the body types and everything is, you know, those are changing as well.
Tim, for all of our entertainment's sake, I wish every owner in the NFL was like Jim Irsay. Someone who covers the Titans. I am glad that Amy Adams Strunk is not. Yeah. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week with hopefully some more owner tea, some more owner drama.
Let's go. All right, see you guys. Get
me on. Awesome. Right. Thanks, Tim. Coming up next, we were out at Titans practice today. What we saw, our takeaways, what we liked, what we didn't like. We'll get into that coming up next, plus TD in 30 minutes on his takeaways from practice. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, and hey, the game summer ticket tour is headed to Streetcar Taps and Garden, located at 4916 Charlotte Pike. This Thursday afternoon from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., we'll be there as well, pumped for it. You can come eat, drink, hang, and leave with a pair of free Sounds, Preds, Big Machine, Music City Grand Prix, or concert tickets. Also, you can get signed up for the grand prize, Titans tickets, Preds tickets in the 501 Club, and a two-night stay at Opryland Hotel with access to Sound Waves. Black Tie Moving delivers the Game Summer Ticket Tour. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/tour. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.